Oh, yes. Yes, you heard that music on Monday, and you heard that music yesterday, and you're hearing it again today. Have you caught on? It is not that we're changing our theme music at all, because, as you know, we shuffle all kinds of music to open up the program. But that music, this music, I should say, is intended to signal that we are continuing the conversation. Isn't that brilliant? That's a brilliant move on my part, I must say. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we return to the scene of the crime, as it were, in Minneapolis, where the trial is on, but I'm having problems with it. I'll be frank with you. I'm having problems with the way this trial is going. Not that it means anything, not that it causes any major consequence, but I'm concerned. I'm concerned about the direction of this trial. And all the more so because it's early in the trial. And in my view, it's too early for things to go awry, to kind of go sideways. But I'm getting that sense. Am I the only one? I'm getting the sense that things have begun to go sideways here. Look, what is the purpose of this trial? Is it not to find out how George Floyd died on May the 25th last year? Who killed him? What killed him? Is this the purpose of the trial? To be definitive about it. And then things go from there. But I'm not getting the sense that that has been established yet. We're having all kinds of conversations going on, and I can't help but believe that people are confused. I certainly am. I'm confused because the reason you have a trial is you have a target. There's somebody you have at the crosshairs for doing something wrong, in this case, causing the death of someone, George Floyd. But I mean, I watch the trial to the extent that I can. I follow the news coverage of it. And for the life of me, I can't see where they are accomplishing this single most important mission of being really clear about what this trial is about. Who is a target here? And why is that person a target? Relating to the death of George Floyd. I have never seen a trial where things are rolling along, except nobody knows why. What direction are you going? What are you theorizing? What are you presenting to the public as the mission that you have as a prosecutor in this case? What is the purpose of this trial? And have you yet begun to demonstrate it? It seems that it's a bunch of things all at the same time. And that could only mean one thing. There's major confusion about how this trial is to be conducted. What is the emphasis? What is the focus? What are you going to call into question? At whom are you pointing fingers, and why? And how are we to get to the answer to that question? It's not happening. And yet, that's the first thing that should have been established in this trial. I hit the roof when a 9-year-old, a very emotional 9-year-old at that, was introduced to talk about the death of George Floyd. I said, okay, this does it. This does it. Why was it necessary to take a little child and have her essentially perform as an eyewitness for the prosecution and describe the horrendous experience that she had witnessing or looking at the coverage of the death of George Floyd? A 9-year-old child. That tells me people, somebody in there needs some psychotherapy. Somebody in that office needs to go back to law school. Somebody needs to say, hey, you don't know what the hell you're doing. And somebody needs to say, you would never do that to a little white kid. To drag them through that kind of emotional trauma all over again, simply to evoke an emotional reaction. What is the matter with you? But that was an aside. Let's get down to business, shall we? The purpose of this and any other trial is to establish facts and to establish those facts so as to prove the theory of a case. What is the theory of the case? Could you tell me what it is? It's one thing 1 minute, it's another thing another minute. And we're being ping-ponged all over the place as observers of this trial, and we don't get a sense that they have organized this prosecution in a methodical way. Natural progression from one point and one place to another point and another place in this trial. You get the sense that they're throwing everything. They're throwing everything at us, hoping that something sticks. And it's a chaotic situation, and they're leaving it up to the public to put some order into this process so as to arrive at some conclusion about the case. It's a disaster, in my view. Now, I'm not a lawyer. Let me restate that. I am not a lawyer. I've covered quite a few very high-profile cases involving cops killing people. And those cases proceeded in a methodical fashion for the most part. They were not disorganized. They proceeded in a methodical fashion, and we were able, as the public, to follow what, of course, they presented as the theory of their case, both the prosecution and the defense. That's sensible. In fact, most law schools training lawyers would walk them through the steps of a trial. They will be taught that. This is what happens when there's a trial. But if you follow that directive, you still are lost with this case, because things are out of sequence. Things are out of order. I don't know if that's a deliberate intent or if it's just sloppiness. Either way, it suggests that the people who are conducting this trial are not prepared to do so. And perhaps might have been the wrong choice to take on this assignment. I mean, we can't even get the impression from the prosecutors what they want us to believe about this case. They haven't been definitive about what this case is about. So we don't know whether they're on track or off track. Our only guide is our own intuition. And for some, a bit of experience in observing cases being tried in a court of law. For example, how do you start? This is the start of the trial. And you don't have a definitive explanation from an authority that says, this is how George Floyd died. How do you do that? You leave it wide open so people will fill in the blanks as they go along. And yet it is the crux of the case, isn't it? So one expects at the beginning of a trial like this, we will be informed, we will be told the theory of this case. What is this case going to be about? What can we expect to hear to support the theory of this case? Whether we agree or disagree with the theory is immaterial. We weren't presented with a theory. So I could only surmise that the people trying this case are flying by the seat of their pants and have not yet caught on to the fact that they are blowing it. Is the theory of the case that George Floyd essentially killed himself because he was in such bad physical and medical shape? Then what is the reason for putting ex-officer Derek Chauvin on trial? What are we to understand about the cause of death of George Floyd? when it is not definitive. I don't know how to turn off these various noises, so bear with me. I'm hearing something. I don't know if you are, through my headphones. I thought I turned off all sounds, all interference as I got on air, but apparently not. This is very serious. How do you do that? How do you go to trial and you are putting someone on trial on very serious charges? And yet we don't have an appreciation as to how these charges are appropriate and why they are appropriate and what they emanate from, what are the circumstances in which these main actors were involved, and what did they do to cause themselves to be charged with murder and manslaughter. It's very serious. So all of this to say that I think the case is so muddled. We can't follow the logic of it yet. Those of us who say that we do are probably perhaps more informed or followed this case more closely than most other people. But I don't see how an average person coming into this trial, coming into this case, really gets an understanding by now as to what this case is about. What is your evidence? What will you be proving? I don't know how you choose to do that, take the risk of doing that. Every case like this, involving murder and the death of someone, you would think that from the beginning, from the very beginning, that will be definitively established. But you have a situation in this case where it's, well, pick your own theory. You'll figure it out. We choose to go with the murder and manslaughter. But why? You yourself are saying, when you are quoting the medical examiner, did not supply a definitive cause of death here. You did, but you're not the medical examiner. And since you pronounced the cause of death as being X, you have been conducting this trial along that line, without first definitively proving from the medical examiner's point of view what the cause of death is. It has not yet been firmly, incontrovertibly established. This is careless and sloppy work. I want the listeners to know that this case is so important that even though Derek Chauvin was dismissed from the force in the course of leading up to this case, of course, that the Minneapolis Police and Peace Officers Association is funding his defense, even though he doesn't belong to that organization anymore, to the tune of in excess of $1 million. So somebody is taking this case very seriously. Somebody has a huge stake in its outcome. Imagine that. And we're playing footsie. We kind of casual. We have not seen the prosecution really knuckle down here and adopt a disciplined approach to establishing the theory and establishing the facts and introducing the evidence to support those facts. Not yet. And yet we are significantly down the line with this case. We're at a point where people are discussing, witnesses are discussing what they saw. Witnesses are crying on the stand when they have no reason to be there right now. And even if they were to describe what they saw, they're not experts. They are not experts. And we, the public, are encouraged to accept their testimony as expert testimony. And they are beyond, well beyond the initial demand in this case, which is to establish and explain to the public the cause of death in a definitive way by an expert. So I'm worried about the case. I'm worried about the way it's being handled. I'm worried about it doesn't seem sequential. It is not following, it's not following a normal sequence in my head. It may be that the problem is with me. I have some strange expectations about how you run a trial, especially of this type. Which is a disciplined method that you have to adopt because you are trying to take the jury take the jury along the path that you want the jury to appreciate. This is what matters in this trial. I will stop there for a moment because I intend to continue this conversation, but I've said enough in this introduction to pique your interest, I hope. Are you comfortable with where this case is right now? Are you comfortable about the fact that it has progressed or is progressing along a logical line, a methodical approach? I can't tell people how to try their cases. As I said before, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm a pretty damn good reporter. And I have covered a lot of these kinds of cases before. And it bothers me that you don't see self-correction. Somebody should be in charge of saying, hey, we're off course. Let's get back on course. And these are the things that we have to do in order to get that done. The case isn't so much for the jury to decide. It's not so much that. The case is about the obligation and the necessity of the lawyers on either side to lay their case out and methodically pursue the case as they outlined it. Not with people talking about how they remembered feeling when they saw this, or how they felt when they heard that. That is not expert testimony. This is a case that should center strictly on expert testimony, because you have basic questions occurring. How did George Floyd die? And that question leads into the obvious. If no one can explain how George Floyd died in great detail and qualify his death as a murder, then how dare you suggest that this trial is about the charges of murder in the second degree, murder in the third degree, and manslaughter. You haven't established that? Who established any of these crimes? Who's talking about it now? It is the pillar of the case. The whole case pivots around it. And we have people engaging in all kinds of things except the one most important thing, which is you identify your theory and you don't move one inch to the left, you don't move one inch to the right. You stick to it and you hammer home your points with what? Evidence. People's memories of an event is not evidence. People talking about how they felt, people crying on the stand, not evidence. It does not help your case. It certainly doesn't help George Floyd. You're not prepared to take on this trial at this level. You're not prepared. You giving some kind of impression that, yeah, you're dealing with the law. I just told you, you're going up against $1 million in legal help. 12 attorneys. What do you think? They're there to play, footsie? Your job is to be fixated on what you say. This is your claim. And it's on this basis that you have brought these charges. You're the prosecution. And you so far, you're not gaining much ground in defending your own theory. What the hell are you doing in the court? Why don't you get a bunch of sandwiches and say, look, everybody have something to eat, and we'll come back to this another day. All right. I've bellowed enough into your ear. I'll be merciful and considerate. I'll take a little break, and then we come back and we start talking. And it is not the be-all and end-all of where this ought to go. We're just cracking the surface. Keep that in mind. Right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.fm. I'm Eutrice Lead, and I'm discussing, I'm taking it kind of personally today. I haven't been able to rest easily about this trial. My gut feeling tells me there's so much wrong about it, and I'm very concerned. And I don't want it to be the case that I shut up and then things go in the direction that I believe they will be going. Now, I want to say it now, so I'm on the record. Jackie from Brooklyn, by the way, the number is 888-874-4888. Call that number to get on the air and talk about this case. Jackie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Okay. Hi, good afternoon, Eutrice, and you've been listening.
Good afternoon,
family.
Jackie.
Good okay. Afternoon, Jackie. I was trying not to say anything, but you make me have to say something. Okay, Eutrice. This is the issue. Before we even talk about George Floyd case, as far as I know, there has never been a white police officer that's been convicted of killing a black person in the United States of America. So that's the context. The next step, the judge and the prosecutor, the judge sets up a lot of things in the pretrial rulings. He's already ruled that the alleged use of prescribed drugs has been attributed or can be testified to regarding George Floyd. So that already takes you off the path of trying to determine whether there's a murder. There's other rulings that the court has made. The next thing is this. The prosecutor and the police, you know, they normally work together in developing cases. So that's another problem. Unless you have a special, can you hear me? Because I'm getting another call.
Yes.
I'm sorry. There's another call coming in, but I'm not taking it.
Tell them unless, to go away and call you back after 2 o'clock.
No. They hung up. They hung up. But okay. What I'm trying to say to you is that the case has a certain posture and structure before it even begins. That's number one. Number two, disclosure of the multi-million-dollar settlement, that is going to taint the jury. And what I find interesting is that the police officer, he went through a divorce, but they sealed his divorce records. His matrimonial records are not available to the public, but the city settlement was made available to the public. The other problem you have here is that the jury, I guess because of COVID, they're not sequestered. So these jurors that swear that they're going to keep an open mind, they get to go home every night, look at the news, and talk to whomever, even though they're not supposed to. But the court has no control over that because they're not sequestered. The other problem here is that it depends on the – I haven't been following it because it's very upsetting to me. So I haven't been following the trial day by day. But what I hear in the snatches of the news briefings is that, you know, for them to ask the witnesses how they felt and do they have black people in their family, are any of those questions relevant to the conduct of the police officer that's on trial? So I'm just saying that you...
It's relevant in the sense that perhaps every case, there's a desire to learn on the part of the lawyers what's inside a juror's head. What is this juror made of? What are the background issues? How does this juror see the world? All this is important. at least.
No, I'm not talking about the jurors. I'm talking about the witnesses. They were asking the witnesses, unless I'm incorrect, you know, how did they feel seeing Mr. Floyd murdered and all of that. But is that really relevant to the fact that you're saying, was it murder? What was the conduct of the police officer that sustains the charges?
Yes, it could be relevant because are you going to have a hostile witness on the stand? You need to be prepared. But you see, the thing is, I'm complaining about and I'm expressing deep concern about is that it doesn't seem that there was careful preparation across the board for this trial.
Well, and I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree. But I don't think he's going to be convicted, okay? Because they're not going to change the scorecard now. They haven't convicted anybody else in these type of cases. And then this is an interesting case now about the, I didn't know about the unions paying for his defense. So that tells you a lot about the continued issue, the political issue of the police unions and the police departments and reforming the police departments. Because how can union funds be used to defend someone who is no longer an officer unless it's because he did these deeds while he was still an officer? I don't know. But that's a.
Yes.
But anyway,
but that's
people
true.
Should do their that research and see if they ever been a police officer ever been convicted of killing a black person while they're on duty. There was a case that just
I
came
do
out
believe
this morning
there was a case,
that.
And I can't remember what year it was, but the cop was Robert Torsney, Torsney.
I remember that, but wasn't that the Clifford Glover case? He wasn't. Was he convicted of killing Clifford Glover here in New York?
I have. This is why I'm going to check. My memory is not as solid on this case as it ought to be. Thank you so much for calling
in. That was in the 70s.
I started today.
All right. Thanks, Beatrice. Be well.
Thank you. Thank you. You too. Duke from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Excuse me. Hi, Beatrice. How you feeling?
Okay. Thank you.
So I've just been watching. Well, first, let me just say this. I think the previous caller was Patricia.
No.
What's her name?
The previous caller was Jackie.
Jackie, you got to do your research. That's not correct. There has been white officers on duty who have been convicted of murdering black men in America. I think that case in Chicago was an example where the guy, I can't think of names. Remember when they shot the boy in the middle of the street?
I'll check my notes and refresh my memory.
She's definitely wrong on that. But anyway, in terms of the trial, I mean,
can I make a suggestion?
Yes, ma'am.
It's much better to say I'm not sure she's right on that, rather than say
I am sure. I am definitely sure. I don't know the
details.
Yes,
but you don't say it
saying.
That way. Is what I'm trying to communicate to you. Because coming out that way, it sounds like an indictment as opposed to, well, maybe her records weren't as accurate or up to date as they ought to be. But you don't want to sound condemnatory, and you did.
Okay, let me rephrase that then, since you made that correction. Forget about what she said, because the statement that I am making is that I'm certain there has been a white on-duty police officer who has been convicted of murdering a black man in America. But I cannot give you the exact details. I would have to research it. I think it was the case of the guy in Chicago. But anyway, that's
That's a great improvement from your first statement. A great improvement.
Okay. I'm sorry. And, you know, I'm going to just say this to you, Therese. One thing about your forum, and you always do say this, is that one of the whole functions of your forum is to teach people or to help people learn or better their communication skills for public consumption, I guess you would say. So,
yes.
You know, I know the way that I speak is not maybe correct for public consumption. So I'm learning. I'm always trying to be
better. You're doing fine. You're doing fine. You're not a professional orator.
You know. Okay. No, I'm not.
You're doing
no.
just fine. So give yourself
all.
A little break and say, okay. You know, I'm coming along. I'm coming along.
I'm trying to learn. That's why I listen all the time. I'm trying to learn. But in terms of the case, I mean, I just don't know. I feel like what you said in the beginning, like, how can they be doing this? I mean, it almost seems like sand slipping through your hands almost. Like, are they really going to let this case fall through their fingers? I don't. How could they lose this? And the way that it's going, from the few clips that I saw, I think MSNBC has been playing like most of the in court proceeding. I haven't sat and watched like the whole thing, but from the clips that I saw, I just feel like they don't want to win. Now, I don't know if that's the same feeling you have, but
the feeling I
had seems to me
was
like a case
that disturbed me was a sense of disorganization. And it has to do with taking charge of the flow of this case, a logical flow. What are you trying to prove? What is your biggest point? And then you go down the line as to how you're going to achieve for the jury. You will be taking this jury along with you, and you're kind of a teacher in the courtroom. But it seems so disorganized to me. I may be reading this wrong. I want to put it out there because there's a possibility I could be dead wrong about all of this, but I don't think so.
Is there anyone who's broadcasting this thing all the way through?
I'm sorry?
Do you know, is there any network that's broadcasting the whole thing all the way through, or are you just catching like...
Yes, I believe there is one. I had it written down, and I don't see it on my piece of paper.
But they're playing it as a playback, or they're playing it like while it's in session?
You can go online and just say live coverage of Derek Coven trial.
Okay.
And see
I'm going to double check that when we get off the air. Because I haven't really been watching the whole thing. I just, like I said, I've been catching clips of some of the courtroom discussion.
Okay. But you haven't been following the whole thing. Thank you so much. Thank you, Duke, for your call today. Pat from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hello, Pat, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Yes, Pat, you're on the air.
Oh, good. I'm on the air. Great. Great to hear you, Miss Utrice.
Thank you.
Let me just say this. You are not incorrect. You are correct. And although you may not be an attorney, but you are a great journalist. And my knowledge, you have covered stories of this magnitude before, and you have been on point. And you are on point on this case as well. Speaking with a friend of mine, I was telling him, This is nothing more than theater. It's a dog and pony show. One of your callers called in and said, well, you know, when you have cases like this involving the police, because the police in the relationship with the prosecutor. But the truth of the matter is, that is the state apparatus when we look at it. The police, prosecutor, state apparatus. They've already paid the family ahead of time. In most cases, there's a trial. The police does not get convicted. And then down the line, they make a settlement with the family. This time, they decided what they're going to do, in my theory, my opinion, is we'll pay the family up first. We'll let this dog and pony show play out on television, okay? And we're going to get the same conclusion where he will not be convicted of the charges which the prosecutor brought forth. So far,
I need to say this. I don't think they have actually paid the family. The city council has agreed to pay the family. $27 million as compensation. But they haven't yet paid the family that money.
They haven't cut the check?
No.
Well, even if they didn't pay, because I was on the impression that they paid. But that too, once again, that's still unprecedented. Because still, in most of these cases, the family doesn't get a settlement. You don't even get in a terms of how much you're going to get. So once again, putting that carrot out in front to the family is going to have them obligated with the understanding that if you don't get a conviction, you still got the pot of gold. With that comes bench crump and the other civil rights cohort. They're going to have to get out there in front of Joe Jane public and say, hey, don't go out there rioting. We don't need that. It's a nonviolent thing. While they divvy up the money for the next shooting from the police state apparatus.
You raised a dimension to the case that we haven't gotten to yet, not in full anyway. And just keep those thoughts active in your brain, because they will be important not too long from now to discuss publicly and openly. But I thank you for calling in and putting it on the blackboard. Finish what you were saying. Okay, she's gone. Tony from Orlando, you're on the air.
Hi, Trish. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
What's going to be the next Powerball numbers? Because you called it from the beginning. Can I have those numbers for this week's Powerball number? Please.
You know what? Because if I did, I would gladly tell you. We need as many people getting Powerball money as we could encourage.
And I don't play the Powerball, but because if you gave them to me, I would play it. I'm pretty much sure I would win that lotto. But you called it, Yatrice. You talk about a flow. That flow, like, I know you keep bringing up the autopsy, and that's where that flow started. It's starting with the autopsy. And I was only able to catch a couple of clips yesterday from the witnesses. And I agree with you. It was a disgrace to put a child on the witness stand. For a lot of people, I'm pretty sure they know children. This happened a year ago. This must have felt like 3 years ago for that 9-year-old child. Okay, time drags out longer for children than it does adults. So to even do that, and they also don't have control of their emotions and things of that nature. That's why you don't put children on trial, on the stands as a witness, because of all of those little factors. But from what I see is that this prosecution is giving a silver platter to the defense to establish the fact that the death of George Floyd was going to happen, not necessarily completely due to Derek Chauvin's fault. That's what they're trying to establish. They asked a couple of the witnesses how they felt, because a previous caller asked, why is that relevant? From what I'm seeing, they're trying to establish that because they asked them how they felt, and most of them answered with the emotion of anger, being mad, being angry. So what they're trying to establish is, these are a bunch of angry, mad people that were witnessing the scene, in essence, a mob. You know, that these poor police officers were surrounded by a mob of violent, angry people. You know, and they also asked another witness if the neighborhood was dangerous. So now you're surrounded by a bunch of angry people, mad people in a dangerous neighborhood. So that's going to affect Derek Chauvin's psychology and the whole moment. That's what they're doing. They're trying to establish a whole narrative as to giving him a pass up to what he did. We don't need, like you said, we don't need these witnesses. You have the video. You get your experts. How long does it take for a human being to survive while being restricted oxygen? We need to see scientists that can, you know, those are the type of people you need in this type of case. You have the video. You see what happened. Even if you use their autopsy, I mean.
But we don't you're right. And that's my point. This trial is not about how people felt. What are you going to grade them now? You reacted at a 9. Okay, so what does that do about the case?
It helps
this
the defense.
It's not it important the in the case.
It helps the
facts
defense
are important.
To ask them.
You no, know, and that's why facts are important. And somebody in the legal community, especially the Black legal community, needs to be very vocal, as I am trying to be, about the direction of this case and what we are already witnessing, which is a kind of disorder. And this is not the case to have disorder in. You know, we need everybody in good order and clear about what the objectives are and how they're going to achieve them.
Well, Yatrice, I'm not one that calls for violence and things like that, but if this thing goes the way it goes, at the minimum, all of these people, judges, prosecutors, whoever is working in that prosecution office, they all got to go because they are not doing their job of prosecuting this case. All they're doing is setting it up for the defense. They're throwing them a softball and cushioning it so that at the most, from what I'm seeing this case going, it's going to be like some sort of involuntary manslaughter or something like that. If that.
Let's see between now and Friday if there are any especially egregious twists and turns in this case. Thanks so much for calling. Thank you all for calling. And we still have this conversation continuing tomorrow. This is, it's not being presented as a major, major, major case, but it is. And that's why I'm so worried. I'm so disturbed about the direction it's headed in. Thanks again. Let's meet up again tomorrow and continue the conversation once more at 888-874-4888. Take care. See you mañana. Bye-bye.